boot the British out. We would agree on what I was to have for lunch and supper the next day. After my writing day was over, I would go for walks in the rolling hills of the tea estates. Unfortunately, the novel sputtered, coughed, and died. It happened in Mathuran, not far from Bombay, a small hill station with some monkeys, but no tea estates. It's a misery peculiar to would-be writers. Your theme is good, as are your sentences. Your characters are so ruddy with life they practically need birth certificates. The plot you've mapped out for them is grand, simple, and gripping. You've done your research, gathering the facts, historical, social, climatic, culinary, that will give your story its feel of authenticity. The dialogue zips along, crackling with tension. The descriptions burst with color, contrast, and telling detail. Really, your story can only be great, but it all adds up to nothing. In spite of the obvious, shining promise of it, there comes a moment when you realize that the whisper that has been pestering you all along from the back of your mind is speaking the flat, awful truth. It won't work. An element is missing. That spark that brings to life a real story, regardless of whether the history or the food is right. Your story is emotionally dead. That's the crux of it. The discovery is something soul-destroying, I tell you. It leaves you with an aching hunger. From Mathuran, I mailed the notes of my failed novel. I mailed them to a fictitious address in Siberia, with a return address, equally fictitious, in Bolivia. After the clerk had stamped the envelope and thrown it into a sorting bin, I sat down, glum and disheartened. What now, Tolstoy? What other bright ideas do you have for your life? I asked myself. Well, I still had a little money, and I was still feeling restless. I got up and walked out of the post office to explore the south of India. I would have liked to say, I'm a doctor, to those who asked me what I did, doctors being the current purveyors of magic and miracle. But I'm sure we would have had a bus accident around the next bend, and with all the eyes fixed on me, I would have to explain, amidst the crying and moaning of victims, that I meant in law. Then, to their appeal to help them sue the government over the mishap, I would have to confess that, as a matter of fact, it was a bachelor's in philosophy. Next, to the shouts of what meaning such a bloody tragedy could have, I would have to admit that I had hardly touched Kierkegaard, and so on. I stuck to the humble, bruised truth. Along the way, here and there, I got the response, "A writer? Is that so? I have a story for you." Most times, the stories were little more than anecdotes, short of breath and short of life. I arrived in the town of Pondicherry, a tiny, self-governing union territory south of Madras, on the coast of Tamil Nadu. In population and size, it is an inconsequent part of India. By comparison, Prince Edward Island is a giant within Canada. But history has set it apart. For Pondicherry was once the capital of that most modest of colonial empires, French India. The French would have liked to rival the British, very much so, but the only Raj they managed to get was a handful of small ports. They clung to these for nearly 300 years. They left Pondicherry in 1954, leaving behind nice white buildings, broad streets at right angles to each other, street names such as Rue de la Marine and Rue Saint-Louis, and kepis, caps, for the policemen. I was at the Indian Coffee House on Nehru Street. It's one big room with green walls and a high ceiling. Fans whirl above you to keep the warm, humid air moving. The place is furnished to capacity with identical square tables, each with its complement of four chairs. You sit where you can, with whoever is at a table. The coffee is good,